Your passion becomes your prison the moment it stops becoming a choice.
Broadcasting from Boston, Massachusetts, you're listening to the Technology Equals Equality Podcast.
Welcome back to the Technology Equals Equality Podcast. I'm your host, Lori Brooks, and this is episode 78. Have you ever tried to scale your lemonade stand? Well, that's exactly how our next guest began her journey. Anna Mandel is a high-performance business lifestyle coach who recognizes that time is a constraint and assists her clients in creating a direct impact in areas of life that are important to them quickly and thoroughly. Anna has been teaching her brand of performance and fulfillment for over 6 years, inspired by her mentors, coaches, and institutionally proven methodologies. Using her proven coaching process, Anna enables her clients to discover their internal power, enabling them to leave lasting legacies in both their jobs and personal lives. Anna has coached thousands of individuals and has touched countless lives. She's taken her skills in the realm of emotional intelligence, confidence, fulfillment, total self-alignment, and financial freedom, and has combined them with trainings on business, relationships, parenting, and so much more. Anna, welcome, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
We are super excited to have you with us this afternoon, and we'd love to hear all about your entrepreneurial journey. But before we actually dive into your story, we'd love for you to kind of rewind the clock just a little bit. I want you to kind of go back to days of high school or even junior high. What did you think life would be like before you became an entrepreneur, before you began branding yourself and building out your business? What did you think life would be?
Well, I'll definitely tell you this part. I think at a couple different points. The first being, I'll take you all the way back to elementary school when we're all asked that pivotal life-changing question, what do you want to be when you grow up, right?
Yes.
And I didn't understand the question. What do you mean, what do I want to be when I grow up? How to be me.
Good one, Anna.
They're like, who are your role models? And I was like, huh? Me. Literally cannot remember what I wrote down. I think I like made something up.
That's hilarious.
And I grew up, I had my first lemonade stand when I was like 8 years old. I think most entrepreneurs, if not every entrepreneur, has their own lemonade stand at one point. And I've got to tell you, my lemonade stand was probably the best, not to brag or anything. And it started off with multiple ventures. So the first one, I had a partner. We were on the side street. It was like warm lemonade. And we didn't have very many customers. We still made a good amount of money. But I was just like, how can we make this better? And so I live on the corner. It was on the corner of the side street and a main street. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to venture off the main street, even though it's more dangerous with all the cars. So I was like, I'm going to set up big posters, lots of colors and bubble letters. And, you know, I'm going to alert, put them way down the street to alert people to slow down that there is a lemonade stand. And I didn't want to just be, this is after a couple of stages, you know. And then I was like, I don't want them to just think it's some crappy lemonade. I want them to know that they should really stop. And so I named it like Anna's Icy's or something. I had a big table. I had an extension cord with a blender. I had three flavors. And yes, I charged way more. I got rid of my business partner. I remember walking to the yard, counting up my profit, you know, my revenue. And my mom looked at me and she goes, now, honey, you do realize you have startup costs. Like, you know, that lemonade, we purchased it for you, and the electricity and so forth and so on. And I was like, what are you talking about? Those were pre-negotiated up front. It was like totally floored, just like awestruck. So that was me as an 8-year-old. And it's really interesting. You know, I grew up in the time of the dot-com bubble. I grew up during the recession. And what's interesting is I have two parents who's like both of their industries collapsed. My mom was in journalism, my dad was in real estate. And during the dot-com bubble, news, most people don't realize this, news became free. So their entire revenue model shifted and changed. And like, it was hard. Like I watched her suffer, paid for you, suffer, pay freeze and have to lay off people and have more work and be paid less. And, you know, it was just awful. Like, my mom was lucky enough to be one of the people who found her passion, but I grew up with a mom who literally hated her passion. And so I thought of it as, like, her passion had become her prison later on when I actually glimpsed what made her tick about journalism. I had never seen it until I was in college. And so that was heartbreaking for me to discover. And with my dad, I mean, he was in the safest industry, you know, and he'd go to different companies, but safest industry, was out of work for like 8 years. And so during this time where we're being told, oh, go to school, get good grades, go to this college, buy a safety care company. And I was like, what a load of you know what.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really hard. And so in in high school, I started researching finance. And I was like, you know what? Money doesn't mean you're good or evil. It's the best thing we have to barter and trade right now. And if I don't understand money, it's going to run my life and I'm not going to be in charge of it. So that's when I started educating myself about finance. And I read this book that's like Your Money Ratios and taught you how to have safe, secure job for a long period of time and your 401k and why 401k and the difference between a Roth and an IRA and all the, and how to like retire working 40 hours a week for like 40 plus years with a house that's paid off. And you know, I just looked at that book and I was like, I want more than that.
Uh-huh.
And so then I came across the Infamous Rich Dad Poor Dad series and Cashflow Quadrant and really understood passive income and even the difference between self-employed and a business owner. There's a big difference. And then I went to college and just started, and the only reason I went to college was because my parents wanted me to. I didn't even want to go to college because I thought it was a terrible investment. And granted, I had a lot of things spring out of it, but for the rate of return, I didn't see it. And I had experiences, and I was like, oh, okay. I like had to play the role of an intern. I went to Northeastern and we had internships. Mm-hmm. And so I remember very specifically like dressing myself down and being like fluffy, and because I knew that people wouldn't take me seriously or that I'd be viewed as entitled in the workplace. So I like literally put on a role of playing intern. And even with that, I was not low enough or not intern enough. Like I found out later that my direct manager like defended me to upper management. She goes, look, Anna's not your regular intern. She can't do regular intern stuff. That's why this person is doing that stuff now. And what's really cool is in that company, I created my own project. Like I looked for problems, for things that I hate or that frustrate me like to no end. And I look to see how I can disappear them or how I can optimize them so I can do them for as little as possible. And working that company for 6 months, I created my own project, planned it, developed it, executed it, and saved the company over $25,000 in overhead on an annual basis. And everywhere since, you know, from that point or whenever I had a corporate job, it would always be like I'd have like a consultant's mind without even realizing it, or what people call an intrapreneur. I was always difficult to work with. From a human resources point, I'd walk into my interviews and say, so I have this, this, and this that I still want to be able to do, and it would mean I'd have to have a half day or I'd have to leave early this day, and, you know.
Right. Right.
That's how I would be, but I would, you know, create, like, amazing results for their company. And I'd oftentimes find myself getting bored after 6 to 8 months, and it would be like I felt like if they're paying me, I should be there to make their company better. And if there wasn't anything for me to work on, I would get anxious and stressed. And
I really appreciate you mentioning how your mom was a journalist and witnessing that her passion became her prison. I think that is something that is not well articulated by many, and I appreciate the way you stated that, because there are those who end up imprisoned by their passion because they follow that to no end, and the ability or the recognition of the opportunity to pivot is not necessarily as apparent to some as it is to others, or it's not
something
that you can.
Also, you know, like my, I still need points that I remember. My mom, she was the breadwinner, and right. for a while, so the alternative choices had huge impact on her family's life and style if she were to keep them. And what's interesting is your passion becomes your prison the moment it stops becoming a choice.
You got
and you're
it.
No longer free to constantly choose it. It goes away. It becomes a have to, and that creates the drudgery and the so forth and so on. So what I've discovered is really the essential missing part from being able to live a passionate life or to follow your passion is to make sure that you have a structure for financial independence so that mm-hmm. your passion can be your choice.
Exactly.
And what I saw with both my parents is I was like, you want me to go get a safe, secure job? And I was like, but job security is an issue. Like, it's so
yes.
competitive.
Yes.
And you're treated terribly. And then on top of that, like, the rate at which your jobs disappear. I mean, we had, what was it, Redbubble? No, not Redbubble. It was Redbox. Redbox
yes.
was here so quickly and gone so fast.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, that whole company disappeared. All those jobs disappeared.
You got it.
And then, and that, so it's not, you know, a job, it's a whole company. And then you have industries disappearing.
Yes.
You know, so I was like, how do you expect me to go to school now to learn to prepare myself for a job
that may or may not exist?
Yeah, we don't even know exists yet.
Right.
And so that was really my biggest concern with all of that, with the job industry. It's interesting. If you know Eric Worre, he is a top network marketing professional, if not the top, as well as trainer. And he, along with many other esteemed individuals, he discovered that back in the 20s, I think, we were 80% entrepreneurs and 20% employees. And over the period of the Industrial Revolution, it switched to become 80%, right? 80% employees and 20% entrepreneurs.
Right.
So I found that really, really interesting because nowadays everyone's like, oh my gosh, being an entrepreneur is so risky. And I kind of look at it and I'm like, how is it less risky
than what you're doing? Yeah, you know, it's funny that you say that. I think that we as entrepreneurs all very much so are synonymous in that thought process because it's like, okay, you're worried about job security, but I don't think you're taking it a step further to recognize that the security doesn't exist because it's a job.
Right.
Simple.
It's such a falsity. You have like a regular paycheck coming in.
Right.
Until it's not.
Right? Until
and
it's not.
For
yes.
So long.
Exactly. So. And you've got to figure it out from there. No, I agree 100%. And I think you did a great job of segueing us into that next section of the show, you know, really kind of looking at the first steps that you took, which was really kind of making the recognition, I believe, in yourself, you know, that there were positions that, you know, as an intern, you were bored, sitting around and not doing anything, not having a solution or having something you need to find a solution to is not really how you like to perform day to day. You'd rather, you know, have the ability to kind of dive in and take care of something versus sitting back working on possibly repetitive tasks that you've worked on before. So it sounds like some of the first steps that you took when it came time to decide to work for yourself was really that mindset, really solidifying for yourself that that was the decision that you wanted to make and move forward.
Yes and no. I mean, when I was working for that company that I explained earlier, I was the first intern to ever get a raise.
Nice.
And I got like 75 cents. I was literally insulted. And my mom was like, yeah, that's great. It's a whole 5%.
Yeah.
Horrible. And I was like, are you kidding me? I just saved them how much every year on the annual basis. And they're going to give me like 75 cents an hour.
Yep.
You've got to be. I literally went around the office complaining to every single employee about it. I was I was furious.
Yep.
And what really had me become an entrepreneur was the concept of the time is now, because I had it for years that I needed to train and develop skills to become an entrepreneur or to be a successful business owner. And I realized that with entrepreneurship, if you're a real entrepreneur, there is no pathway that's outlined for you. Like, teaching entrepreneurship doesn't work. You can learn about different, you know, corporate models or so forth and so on, but it's really just failing again and again and again and picking yourself up and dusting yourself off.
Yes.
And so I quit my last job however years ago. And, you know, I'm not going to say it's been an easy journey. Definitely has not been. But I know that it's better than having a job.
Definitely. I agree. No, definitely. What do you think was the most difficult part for you in taking that leap and taking that step and having that confidence in yourself to move forward with the journey? What do you think was the most difficult piece, and how do you feel like you overcame that?
Definitely the beginning. A skill I didn't realize that I didn't have was my own time management. I had overscheduled myself for my entire life. Mm-hmm. And I would leave the house at, I don't know, 6 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. And I wouldn't come back until after 11. And I was in middle school. I was in high school, you know?
Right.
That's absurd. That's what my schedule would look like. And I would pack my gym bag and my backpack and my hockey equipment or my flute or my trombone because I was in jazz and all sorts of stuff, you know? So I would have all of that for like the whole day with all my books and whatever else. And so when I actually didn't have any outside accountability to do things, it still is. It's still probably one of my greatest challenges in doing things consistently. Mm-hmm. Those have been really difficult. And then also, I discovered it becomes about branding yourself as an entrepreneur. And so some people are totally fine, you know, being like salespeople and selling you whatever that they don't believe in. But for me, I started so many different companies in the past couple of years, past 6 years. And before I always got stopped, especially in network marketing, because I love network marketing, it's amazing, is I would be coached through duplicating their process. And I kept feeling like I was being coached to become an expert in their industry. And I was like, I don't want to be an image consultant. I don't want to teach them to make up the rest of their lives. I don't want to tell you how many push-ups to do. I don't want to tell you what to eat. Like, and so I would always get stopped with the branding part. And so actually now what I do for coaching is I help you get really totally self-aligned. And that was something that stopped me. Is like, how do I know that I've developed this whole methodology that's like your own personal business plan? And it just shocks me that we don't have our own personal business plan or vision plan. Not all companies, but be expected we should start a company with a business plan.
Yes.
And I was just like, why don't we each have our own? Like, why don't we discover that? And yeah, it goes back to the question, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I was just like, if people don't become that, regardless of whether it's a Disney princess or, you know, like Michael Jordan or whatever, like, that question actually sets us all up to fail, at least on an emotional aspect. And you may be able to discount it at some point, you know, oh, well, it wasn't realistic for me to become a Disney princess, or I'm never going to be a cartoon character. But there's still that sense of, like, I'm not good enough, I didn't make it.
Right.
And so it really starts with, like, who are you at your core? And so I've really done a lot of that as well, because if you don't know your starting point, you really can't go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And also looking at your ending point. And so if you don't know your A or your B, you're kind of like a captain of a ship sitting in the middle of the ocean with trying to get nowhere.
Right, right.
Nowhere fast. So that's probably a huge hurdle as well, is really discovering what my personal brand is so that I don't feel like I'm lying to everyone around me and potentially damaging my reputation.
Really just being congruent with that feeling of what it is you're doing and what you're promoting, being a product of what it is you're preaching, making sure that you are falling in line with what it is you would be selling. I totally understand that feeling and I totally agree with you. I think that is one of the more difficult pieces. If you don't have some sort of grand scheme as to what it is you want to do as an entrepreneur, but you know that you want to be in charge of your journey, it can be a very difficult thing to figure out what that path is for you. too, and figuring out, you know, how to become synonymous with that piece. Do you feel like witnessing both of your parents being in real estate and in journalism being non-tech related journeys, do you feel like technology has assisted you in figuring out where you want to be on your journey? And how do you feel that has differentiated your journey from the journey that you've witnessed your parents on?
I am thankful I know how to use PowerPoint and Excel and Word documents. I was by no means consider myself an expert in technology. I think I'm pretty computer literate, but definitely don't understand the ones and the zeros. it's kind of like we all get gravity, but we don't really know what it is.
Yes,
That's kind of how I feel about computers. But, you know, I think with my parents' generation, what they grew up with needs them. Companies work. Like, they took good care of their people. They, you know, were reliable for being around for a long time. And then, I mean, also the government wasn't in as much debt. So the interest rates were higher and whatnot. So they're like, oh, interest rates will go down in the future. And they did. Like, we're at one of the lowest tax rates ever, and so the 401k structure makes sense. You know, it's all, like, that's all a mindset from 40, 60, I mean, back to the 30s, probably, 30s, 40s. And that was revolutionary for its time. I mean, imagine going to entrepreneurs, like, it's safer for you to have a job.
Right.
And, like, having it be difficult to convince them.
Right.
Complete 180, and we're at that transition point again where, you know, if you're a big company, it's hard for you to move. It's hard for you to be agile. It's like a big boat turning around versus like a little one.
Right.
And that's a major blocking point. And with technology, the rate at which the processes are optimized, you know, if you look at the Ford cars, you know, Ford was the first automobile. I mean, he had factories of people that did pretty much everything.
Uh-huh.
And now you can have a car built, what, pretty much essentially, you can have houses 3D printed, for goodness sake.
Yes.
Like, you get cars have been taken care of for a while. Houses can now be 3D printed.
Yes.
So it's just like, who would have thought that 3D printing would go from something like little, like Legos, to
properties.
Homes? Yeah, like, and how much who knows? Not much at all.
Not long at all.
Like, unimaginable. So, and even as an entrepreneur, you have to think about your services and what you're going to be providing and the sustainability. And sustainability is one of the core things I look at from a business model perspective when I'm working with my clients. Is this sustainable? And, you know, I think there's also been a push towards the environment. So you're gearing towards, you know, just stuff that helps people.
Right.
Stuff that solves a problem, and just being aware of the technological advances.
Mm-hmm.
Differentiation is important. I wouldn't say it's the same. It's stuff I did in investment course in college, and I literally hated it. I, like, disagree with pretty much everything the professor just spoke about. Chapters that I thought were the best, he just, like, skipped right over. And I was like, how dare you stop? Like... So, you know, they talk about differentiating, like, your return. It doesn't make any sense. You're just going to come back to, like, the middle. So why stop wasting your time and just invest in the S&P 500, you know? But if you, you know, Warren Buffett is so incredible because he invests in, let's call it value investing. The things that are sustainable, they're going to continue growing, maybe at a slower rate, but continually grow over time. And you look at his portfolio, it is differentiated, but not like differentiated on like a return on investment perspective. It's different industries, and he's now
wound
all of his, you know, industries together so that they're all supporting each other, and then that becomes a real portfolio and so forth and so on. But when that gets into vertical and horizontal, I don't know if it's alignment, but when you get into like Rockefeller and then there was somebody else back in the day, the horizontal and vertical
segmentation of it.
All of it.
Yeah.
he's kind of got it all going on in his company now, which is great for him and everyone involved in that.
Anna, you're funny.
If you want to talk about careers and jobs, because people are so obsessed with them and how to get up, especially women. We have this whole conversation of, you know, women are paid less and, you know, we're undervalued in the workforce and so forth and so on. And, you know, like, that could be true. Could be. And I just noticed a lot of things that men do differently. First of all, men don't have babies, so it doesn't take them out of the workforce.
Uh-huh.
But in another regard, men do not like taking on more work without being paid more. Women are much more apt to take on more work and sacrifice themselves for it,
mm-hmm.
and not constantly go in and request promotion, you know?
Right.
But and when a woman goes to request a promotion, it's, well, I feel as though, and it's about thoughts and feelings. Men are like, okay, here's my job description. This is what you said. This is now what I'm doing. And there's disconnect because here and here, and I would like this kind of rate.
Right.
You know, like, they demand, they make a request. Women don't even really make requests for how much. They're like, I just want a promotion. And so they're just going to, you know, tap into whatever the next level is. They're like, oh, okay, yeah. It's all based off of objectives. So it can be really scary, mm-hmm. to go and ask for a promotion,
mm-hmm.
whether you're, you know, a woman or a man. And so, but coming from that perspective, it's fear.
Right.
And if you look at a lot, fear is what prevents us from doing a lot of things, either speaking out about injustices, you know, asking for that promotion, starting your business. And ultimately, it comes down to, we don't want to be rejected. And
right.
So I help people not need to, like, you know, I love this little metaphor of using, like, a raindrop as, like, a moment of rejection. And then, like, you can just imagine that it's raining on top of you, just all these different rejections coming down on top of you, like, pouring over your head. And I help you so that you don't have to, like, put up an umbrella and, like, protect yourself or put a raincoat on so it, like, bounces off of you. Literally, there's this great image of Gene Kelly, who is singing his Singing in the Rain dance song, and he's up on the light post, and he literally is smiling and fully embracing the rain. And I help people become so solid in their core that that's what they can do. That fear isn't going to stop them from doing what it is they're out to accomplish. And so that's definitely a core part. And it starts with what I call total self-alignment, which I talked a little bit about earlier. And then I also help people discover how they can be really fulfilled. You know, 80% of people in America with jobs hate their job,
mm-hmm.
which is really sad.
Mm-hmm.
And it, like, you don't even know you hate your job. If you just go onto any metro or subway system, you can just see, like, the robotic and deadness in the people around you.
Yes.
But there's, you know, and people don't even know that they're, like, dying inside. You know, so I help people discover what really lights them up and fulfills them. And then, you know, people get scared of the word fulfillment because they're like, oh, that means I have to give up everything and be broke and be like Jesus or Mary Teresa or whoever, or Gandhi or Nelson Mandela and so forth and so on. And I'm like, no.
No,
you
that's
know,
not what that means at all.
I know. It's so funny, though, isn't it? Like, if you want to be happy, you have to be poor.
Like,
no. No.
No.
Ridiculous. It's actually, like, complete opposite.
Yes.
It's a disservice to yourself and your community and what it is you want to accomplish if you're not taking care of yourself. And it goes back to the whole thing of, like, money means, like, having lots of money means you're a terrible, ugly person, and having no money means you're a good person because you give it all away or something.
Right, right.
And I was like, no, going back to money being the best barter trade system we have so far, because we can't all grow our own food, make our own clothes, and do everything else, you know, like,
exactly.
We're a specialized culture. And so it's literally just the structure of workability in your life. And so then I combine those previous two aspects, social alignment, confidence, with fulfillment and financial freedom. And inside of financial freedom, we look at two different points. One being, how can I be free financially? Like, how can I constantly choose my passion so it doesn't become my prison? And it's it's a very simple equation. You know, people talk about retirement as an age, and I am like, no, it is a financial equation. And there's two. One is, what do I need right now to not have to work anymore?
Yep.
So what are your monthly recurring expenses? And I consider true financial freedom once you've imagined your desired lifestyle and you quantify it in recurring expenses, and then you create passive income, just money that comes in with little to no effort on a regular basis. You can go Google all the different types of it. And then you come out in the positive. That's financial freedom. And then fulfillment becomes a contribution to the world. And I told you a little bit about sustainability. And this is a very advanced concept, but once we die, if you don't have some kind of a vehicle to carry on your contribution, it ends.
Uh-huh.
And this is part of the fulfillment part that I don't get with people for poverty. I'm like, when you die, your mission ends.
Yep.
If you're really committed to something, you'd want it to go on and live beyond you.
Mm-hmm.
And so we actually focus on creating your legacy, and a legacy that you'd be proud of leaving behind you. And that's a very difficult concept for a lot of people to grasp. I rarely even speak about it. It does come out a bit.
Anna, I love that you are facilitating that thought process for so many people. It's a thought process that I don't think people take the time to actually have. What is your legacy? What do you plan to leave when you leave? It's something my husband and I toss around and chit-chat about on a regular basis. We all have a future of some sort that we're looking towards. We're not all disappearing tomorrow. So what is it we're planning to do before we disappear so that when we are gone, there's something left from our journey and what that looks like? I'm sorry, go ahead.
The usual reason for why people don't think about it is because we're living in the mode of scarcity.
Of course.
Paycheck to paycheck.
Of course.
There's, I have all these expenses, and like, I don't have any like survival, you know?
Right.
Yeah, survival, there's no way you're going to be thinking about what can I leave behind, how can I contribute to the world, how can I leave the world a better place, which is your access point to being fulfilled, flooded with just, you know, fullness, basically.
Right. But I'm curious, if you had the opportunity, go back and tell yourself one thing. Go back, say, 10 to 20 years. What do you think that one thing would be?
This actually just came up recently, to write down my everyday successes, whether it's just getting out of bed in the morning, whether it's helping somebody, whether it's tackling that thing that you didn't want to do, whether it's paying a parking ticket, all workability, whether it wasn't eating any crap that day, whether it was going to the gym, you know, just, I think we don't appreciate ourselves enough.
Right.
Or we like inflate our egos, but it's important to notice and to appreciate the things that we are doing, because we're always constantly thinking about everything that we're not doing.
Yes.
So if anything, I would probably say to acknowledge yourself for at least one success that you accomplished that day.
Something that we as a community should really try to implement starting now. Make sure that you recognize what those accomplishments are that you create for yourself throughout the day. What is it you've done? We don't have to always record the major milestones. There's miniature milestones every single day that you can credit to yourself to assist in that mindset shift or to keep the positive mindset there. I love that one, Anna. We should begin implementing regardless as, you know, as to whether or not we have a time machine. The show is really designed to assist entrepreneurs with coming up with a new idea for a business in an industry that they may not have been thinking of. I'd love to know, Anna, if you could change anything at all, what would it be and why?
I think I might break my course down to three different courses. Seminar. I'm trying to market it, and I'm just like, it's so complicated. Why is it so complicated? I only have three pillars, but all the pillars have pillars. Oh, and I'm like, oh, but it's like, how do I create this whole package? So I think it would actually be breaking it down into three different
programs, huh? Yeah, I understand completely. I've been there. I've actually, you know, different sections of things as well, similar to you, because you just realize there's so much going into the program as you begin creating it, really beginning to market and push it forward. So Anna, you've been absolutely outstanding. I thank you so much for sharing your journey and your time and expertise this morning. Please share the best way for our listeners to find you.
Well, I'm on Facebook. You have Anna Mandel, the Facebook / Anna Mandel. I'm on LinkedIn, Anna E. Mandel. And my website is, well, one of my websites, my seminar website is TotalSelfAlignment.com. My personal website is AnnaEMandel.com.
AnnaEMandel.com. Perfect. Well, I will certainly be sure to link to that through the show notes page so that everyone can find you with great ease. Anna, you've been outstanding. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure. I always love talking to you. Kindred spirits.
Yes, always a fun conversation.
Anna, thank you so much for joining us for episode 78. We truly appreciate you sharing your time and expertise with the community. Techie community. How do you go about acknowledging and appreciating your daily wins? Be sure to reach out to Anna Mandel at AnnaEMandel.com, or you can always reach her through our show notes page at technology-equality.com/AnnaMandel. Thank you once again for joining us this week, and until our next episode, when we continue to hear the journey, find the pain, and create solutions. Enjoy the week.